Hello and good morning. It is Sunday, September 9th, and you are finally tuned into the Fantasy Process Report for the week, PPR, on the first Sunday of NFL action.
Yep, and we're awake earlier than some of us normally are.
It's early. It's early for a Sunday, but...
Guys, it's like Christmas morning. You just wake up and you're waiting at the top of the stairs, and your parents say you can't go down yet, but you're just like itching to go, and time is moving like... ridiculously slow.
Something like that. It's close.
Well, I was perfectly fine sleeping in, so all that time that I had to wait up till kickoff went by a little bit quicker, but no, now I have to, bear every second of the day until 1 o'clock.
It's different for me, because the Birds play Thursday night, so...
No, shut up.
I've been done. 1-0, baby. 1-0.
Yeah, you're not done, though. You got your other team now. I think most people would say that, like... they have two favorite teams now that the fantasy kind of world has taken over. You have your number one team, your actual football team, and then your fantasy team is your second favorite team in the NFL.
Speaking of my fantasy team.
Thank God. Here it comes.
Speaking of my fantasy team, I just want to recap a little
bit. Mike Gillisley, that's all I have to say.
Based off last episode, you guys were giving me a whole lot of shit about Jay Ajayi in the third.
Not just us.
Jay Ajayi, two touchdowns. And a two-point conversion.
Long
that's term, 20.2 points and a half
long
point.
Long term.
He actually, it's
a long season.
Actually, didn't have any receptions, so it doesn't really matter whether it's standard or PPR. But that's 20.2 points.
Yeah, 15 more games there, pal.
Man, he only got 62 yards on 15 attempts.
Yeah, two of them were touchdowns, and one was a two-point conversion.
No catches. Ouch.
I'm sorry. 20.2 points is an ouch for you.
I'm thinking ahead, my friend. I'm not living in the past.
I think you should.
Yeah, I don't think you can count on a 32 rushing touchdown projection for the season.
Yeah, that's quite a pace. If he did that, then he would be like on Le'Veon's level.
Oh yeah, be on LaDainian Tomlinson level.
Just saying.
Hungy believes. Hungy's going to take him in the first round next year.
I'm just saying. He might be my keeper in the third. Anyway, he's not. The Eagles Falcons game was Thursday night. Eagles won 18-12.
Honest opinion of it, though. Like,
honest opinion, sloppy.
Okay.
I mean, that's. Oh, yeah. I think first game of the season is always sloppy, no matter what teams are playing. Always. They were sloppy. We ran a poll prior to the game. Which player was going to get the most fantasy points? The options were Julio, Ajayi, Devonta Freeman, or other, and you had to answer for yourself. I believe it was Julio. I believe Julio was the top scorer in PPR leagues.
Yes, he was. Yards alone probably had
the
him
10 catches
there.
Will do it for you.
Yeah, I mean, pick one.
So let's see... Let's see, are you looking at how many people actually picked him?
Yeah, I'm looking at our poll results right now.
Yeah, while you're doing that, I was telling one of my coworkers that he was asking me about like what I thought of the game, and I was like, oh man, it was so exciting. I was just so happy to have football back, and I was like, but honestly, if you're looking at it objectively, if this was like week 7, this would be a really boring, just sloppy, terrible game. But because it was week 1, the kickoff, the opening one, it was just so exciting to have football back.
Yeah, I mean, and that's true even for me as a Giants fan. I was excited all day Thursday, you know. I mean, I was excited for what I was hoping would be an Eagles loss, but I was still glad I just got to watch some football and meaningful football.
Yeah, that's really all it was. I mean, you had the pregame ceremonies and all that, everything put together with the defending champs and just football being back. It made it an exciting game, even though the game itself was not exciting.
Yeah.
Well, it was funny because it ended almost exactly the same as the playoff game.
Yeah, it was a great ending. I will give it that.
Almost exactly the same as the playoff game.
Oh, yeah.
Just the other side of that end zone. Literally, same play, just the other side of that end zone. Yeah. Instead of the right corner,
baffling?
It was the left corner.
Yeah, I mean, he caught it this time, though.
Yeah, but he wouldn't have... I mean, it was the same as last time. Even if he had caught it last time, he still wasn't landing inbounds.
Yeah, well, that's my thing.
And he caught it this time, and he didn't land inbounds.
I was talking to my brother about this yesterday. They were saying that this is a new rule, right? The force-out rule?
No, the force-out rule used to be a thing.
Or there's part of it that's new? They were talking about it.
No, so about 10 years ago, they had something called the force out rule, where the refs could make a judgment call if the receiver had possession while inside the end zone and the defender pushed him out while he was still in the air. They can call it a catch.
Yes,
yeah, obviously that one that's ridiculous. They're drawing this imaginary line going straight up from the sideline vertically, and it's just
that has
no way to judge. I remember that happening, and that was like you watch these replays, and there's just no way to judge whether a guy would have been in or out depending on if the defender didn't push him out. So it's just, I'm glad they have it now where you just have to get your feet in no matter what.
Yeah, that hasn't been part of the rule for almost 10 years.
That's what I was arguing to my brother. Yeah. I was like, there's no way you would know if he came down or not. So you have to just call him out of bounds. But, of course, you know, my brother is, he doesn't know how to look at things very unbiased. I'm not great at it myself.
Especially when it comes to the Eagles, too.
Yeah.
So, results of the poll, 40% actually said somebody else other than the three. 33% did say Julio. So about a third of the people picked Julio. 40% picked somebody else, but we actually only had two write-in answers, Corey Clement and the Eagles defense.
What was your vote on that one? Did you vote JJ or did you vote actually?
I wrote in Eagles defense.
Was that you? Did you vote someone else then?
No. Well, yeah, I voted somebody else.
Okay. Wow, so you're part of that 40%?
Yeah, I voted.
Wow, you didn't pick the 7% JHI?
I was being facetious and I picked the Eagles defense because.
Wow, way to ruin your own poll.
Facetious.
Either way, it worked out.
I mean, I feel like the only other options really would have been like Matt Ryan or like Zach Ertz.
Yeah,
like, I couldn't really see anyone else getting up to that.
That's what I mean. I
think quarterbacks would be null and void in this type of play.
Right. I tried to pick position players that were going to... The only one that would have made sense there would have been Ertz if you're going to look at anybody else.
Yeah.
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 Agreed.
Nelson had a good game, though, too.
In terms of catches, he didn't have a good fantasy game.
Well, yeah, but that's just because, like, you know, they didn't throw the ball downfield to him.
Well, he had what, like eight catches?
Got most of the catches, and in the first half, I saw some stat that, like, Nick Foles was, like, 10 for 16 or something like that for, like, 55 yards. And so he had, like, 10 completions for, like, under 60 or 70 yards, and most of them were to Aguilar because it was these screen passes or slants or something like that where he'd get the ball and be instantly tackled 3 yards downfield.
He had eight catches, but he only had 33 yards. So it's not like – if you're on a full-point PPR league, that's 11 points. But
yeah, that's a good week.
But if you're in a half-point league like we are, I mean, that's only 8 points.
But I look at that, and I see – I mean, most people play in PPR leagues, I think, at this point. But I see 8 catches, and that's definitely encouraging, I'd say.
Yeah,
maybe not the 33 yards.
For future
but,
weeks.
Well, yeah. you have to look at how many targets he got from Foles.
That's good.
That's what I'm saying. Clearly, they're looking his way with Alshon out. You know, I don't know what his value is going to necessarily be once Alshon's back. But in the time being, clearly he's getting the looks. So
I think they're different kinds of players. I think you can have those kind of receivers coexist on teams. I think you've seen it before where you have that typical outside dominant kind of true number one receiver, and then you have the slot guy, and they both can coexist. I mean, the Packers have done it for a long time with Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson or Greg Jennings or whoever. I think you can have both of those guys have successful seasons.
I think the best example of that, the outside main guy and the inside slot guy, is Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
When Peyton Manning had both of them, he made both of them work.
I mean, even Eric Decker had that one season. I mean, granted, this is an outlier because Peyton Manning had like 55 touchdowns, but he made Julius Thomas, Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, and Eric Decker all viable fantasy options.
Yeah.
Damn, they had Julius Thomas, too.
That's kind of annoying,
though, when
that happens.
He made all of them.
I hate that when it's just like you have good players on a team that have a lot of good weapons, so you don't know if they're going to be the one that has the 150-yard game.
Yeah, that's true. I always think back to, it was my freshman year of college. It was after the Packers won the Super Bowl, and their five wide receivers were, in some order, Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson, James Jones, Randall Cobb, Donald Driver, and then they also had JerMichael Finley. So there were six legitimate options on that team.
Yeah. It's a good problem to have from, like, an actual fan standpoint.
Oh, yeah, because the defense doesn't know how to cover anyone, and when you bring in a five wide receiver set, legitimately, any of them could get the ball.
It's true. It's very true. Well, I mean, that's... So we've been talking about the one game that has happened already, and we have 15 games to go in the next 48 hours.
Oh, yep. Yes. Bring it on.
But I think the number one news topic in the world of fantasy, which I think we have to spend the most time talking about because it really is the number one news topic in fantasy right now.
Jason, can you take a guess?
No, I can't. Can you guys give me a hint?
Sure. Your number one running back that you drafted first overall is inactive.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Le'Veon Bell will not play today. Did not travel with the team, will not play because he doesn't feel he's getting paid enough. First
this
of all,
is horseshit. I'm
before
out.
We get into before we get into the fantasy details, I just have to say this, and I'm saying this objectively as a football fan. He's not doing himself any favors. And no. here's why. He's making it abundantly clear that the money is more important to him than actually playing the game. And it's a contract year for him, and other teams can see that. Other teams are seeing that the money's more important to him, and they're going to stay away from him when it comes time for him to sign a contract with another team. Because he's not going to go back to the Steelers at this point. We already know that's done. Not. He's burned the bridge. So...
I think they burned the bridge.
I think,
I think the fault is the other way around.
The Steelers offered him, a $63 million deal over 4 years? How do you not take that as a running back?
I think he just wanted the guarantees. I mean,
that was the issue. The issue is the guaranteed money.
It was like $40 million guaranteed, wasn't it?
I forget what the actual numbers were. I think he just wants to break the trend. Yeah, I think David Johnson, his contract just came out yesterday. He got 30 mil. Vastly got under what he should have. He's a number 2 or 3 running back in this league, and he's asking for... he got $13 million a year. $10 million a year guaranteed. He signed a 3-year extension for $39 million.
Which is more than it was in the past couple of years, but still, yeah.
The market has gone up, though. The market has gone up, and I think... that a guy in his situation probably should have been making at least $15 million a year. I think Le'Veon Bell is probably asking for at least $20 million a year. And
so
Le'Veon is making a noble cause here. Like he's fighting to try and even out the pay gap between players. I think he's looking at the quarterbacks for a long time have been getting so much more money and so much more money guaranteed and all this and that. And he looks at Kirk Cousins. Just got, $78 million all guaranteed or something? And he's thinking, all right, Kirk Cousins is like the 5th or 6th, 7th, whatever, top 10 quarterback of the league. And he's saying, I'm like the number one running back, number
two
running back.
But that's quarterbacks. Running backs don't get that much because they don't have the same kind of durability.
But that's why I think
that's true. But that's the fight. He's trying to even it out. He's trying to say, I'm just as important or maybe not as important to my team's success, but I'm one of the top players in my position. I should be getting paid somewhat close to what they are getting paid.
I don't think anybody's saying he's not important, but I think the running backs hit 30 and fizzle out fast.
Which is why he's trying to get his money now.
The fact that the Steelers waited so long shows that they wanted him for the rest of this contract, and they were going to use him as much as they possibly could for the rest of this contract and get everything out of him that they can, and just let him go.
In mid-July.
It's not fair to him. As a running back, as a guy who is as good as he is and used as much as he is, it's not fair to him that the team is just overusing him like he's a piece.
In mid-July, the Steelers made an offer to Le'Veon Bell, 5 years, $70 million. 33 of it was guaranteed, and the first 3 years would pay out 45. That is the highest deal for any running back in history. That's bigger than Gurley's deal.
Who?
Gurley. Gurley got that monster deal. That would have been bigger than Todd Gurley's deal. He turned it down. I don't...
It's the guaranteed money that he wants.
Right, but that's ridiculous. You are making it you first rather than team first, and the Steelers are realizing that, especially all the players coming out. Antonio Brown tweeted out, we got, we all we need. Which is an Eagles thing, that's fine, but he tweeted out, we all we need, literally as a subtweet at him, we, in the team, that's all we have, and that's all we need. You stay away. You deal with your money thing somewhere else.
I don't know. I see it from the side that these guys are out here, running backs in particular, risking their lives. Like, this is football. This is a man's sport. This is... People have a chance to no longer be able to be the dad that they want to be, you know? And he's asking for, at the very least, compensation for that risk that he's putting himself in. And that's where the guaranteed money is. And I think that if you're the Steelers, you should play that smarter and realize that you have the best back in the league and that you also have the best wide receiver in the league. So you can spread the ball a little bit more. And I would have gotten a deal done before they had to franchise tag him the first time. I'm glad the Giants never had to franchise tag Odell.
This is interesting.
Could have gotten ugly.
These are two articles from CBS Sports in the top stories. Same author, CBS Sports. One day ago, here's why there's a chance Le'Veon Bell could report to Steelers on Saturday. 34 minutes ago. Steelers anticipating a lengthy absence by Le'Veon Bell as holdout enters regular season.
How quickly things are changing.
I just think from the Steel, I get it from both perspectives. Like, I get from Le'Veon, he wants whatever is or isn't actually true. He believes that he's worth a certain amount, and he's willing to hold out until he gets it. And so I understand that. I just think he could probably go the Earl Thomas route and show up, but then still fight for his contract in the meantime. And then from the Steelers route, I understand it, because you've looked at in the past couple of years, running backs are sort of interchangeable, and they're sort of easy to, not easy to find, but they're easier than other positions to find in the middle of the rounds in drafts. You've seen it happens all the time. Like, you look in Atlanta, Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman, neither were high draft picks. Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen, both were fourth or fifth round draft picks. David Johnson was like a fifth or fourth, sixth, whatever. My point is, any of these guys are middle round draft picks, and you see these diamonds get unearthed all the time. And the Steelers in the past couple of years, when Le'Veon Bell is suspended or injured or whatever, the running backs seem to do well based on their schemes, based on their offensive lines, anything like that. I think in the couple of games D'Angelo Williams started the past couple of years, he was one of fantasy's high-scoring running backs. So I think you do have this amazing talent in Le'Veon Bell, but I think from the Steelers' perspective, he's just not worth that gargantuan contract, but to another team, he might be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another team that uses him more efficiently. Exactly.
But I think it is kind of unfair that the Steelers are dragging it out and stretching it out and franchise tagging him and just making it 1 year at a time. I think that is a little unfair to him. But from their perspective, it makes sense.
His clock's ticking. He doesn't have that much more time. I don't think he gets more than this contract. I think he might get another contract after this, but it's not going to be the monster one that he deserves.
Now, here's the real question. Now, Le'Veon's screwing fantasy owners up all over the place because everybody took him in the top three.
Yeah.
Whether he was 1, 2, or 3, he went in the top three.
Including myself.
So.
Can't blame you, Jason. I would have taken him if you didn't.
You were quick on the waiver wire this week and you got James Conner, can you start James Conner against Cleveland this week?
Absolutely.
Really?
I would say, yeah, absolutely. If you just look at every report I've seen out of Steelers camp is that James Conner looks awesome. Everyone loves him. They plan on using James Conner exactly as they would have used Le'Veon Bell. So it's not like a quarterback, let's say
Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, like let's say Aaron Rodgers gets injured or whatever and then Brett Hundley comes in. The whole game plan shifts. But with the Steelers, if Le'Veon Bell is out and James Conner's in, I've heard the game plan is not going to shift. And if you look at the production that they got out of D'Angelo Williams, and he managed to score unbelievably well when Le'Veon Bell was out and he was starting, I think it's a no-brainer to start Conner.
I want to say yes, because I did get him in two of my leagues. I'm in five, which is ridiculous, and it's so excessive. 2 years ago, I was in four, and I said that was too much. I'll never do more than three. Yeah. Then last year, I went up to five.
Say it every year.
I'm still in five.
Every year, I say I'm not going to do more than two.
Anyway, I was able to get James Conner in two of them, and I'm really struggling with the thing, because, yes, the Steelers say we like him, we're going to give him as much workload as possible, whatever, but he's not Le'Veon. Like, even if you give Le'Veon that kind of work, Le'Veon's going to get the job done, because he really is the best in the league. we really haven't seen enough of James Conner to know whether he's going to be able to handle that much workload. We don't know whether he's got the endurance, the durability. Literally, we've only seen him play in college. We really haven't seen his ability to be a feature back. This is going to be the first real test to do it, and I think you're hard pressed to start him. If you are struggling to fill someone in the flex position, then yes, I think he could be worth a flex start. Otherwise, I'd leave him on the bench this week to really see what he does.
Yeah, I think obviously like Connor isn't Le'Veon, but if they're going to just slot him in and play the same game that they would have played if they had Le'Veon, I think, like, let's say you give Le'Veon 30 touches and he'll get you a solid 20, 25 points, easy, no problem. I think if you give those same 30 touches with the same screen passes, the same kind of runs, the same sweep runs, all that kind of stuff, if you give those same 30 touches to James Conner, I don't think he gets you 20, 25, but he'll still get you, like, 10 or 15 maybe.
My point is, we don't know whether he's going to physically be able to handle 30 touches.
Yeah, I don't think they're giving him that many touches. I mean, I know that they're saying that they're going to follow the same game plan. Obviously, they're also going to say that they love him and everything. That's obviously what's going to come out of his own camp.
Chip Kelly had two wins and said, we're following the same system. So,
but my point is, he's, like you said, he's not Le'Veon Bell. I think that after five runs, if he only has 10 yards, then they kind of start to adjust their game plan. Because, you know, yeah, that's what you have to do. You can't just go into a game and say, this is how we're going to run all 60 minutes of the game.
Which is really good for Antonio Brown owners.
I mean, like, he's getting his own either way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he'll benefit slightly. I think Juju Smith-Schuster benefits more than Antonio Brown benefits more.
Who's their tight end now? Because the tight end...
He's out. Vance
Jesse
McDonald.
James or Vance McDonald.
Vance McDonald is out.
Who is their tight end now?
He's their tight end, but he's out this week.
Okay.
I don't know who their tight end is after...
You're not answering my question.
If you don't know who Vance McDonald is,
I
you don't know
who
his back...
McDonald is.
Well, you don't know his backup is my point.
Yes.
Off the top of your head. Doesn't matter who their backup tight end is.
Who's the guy they had last year that broke his something on that dive that they didn't call it?
The
catch?
Penn State tight end, Jesse James.
Jesse James.
He was
that's
a Penn
right.
Stater?
Yeah.
Was he really?
Oh.
Yeah, a couple years ago.
Huh. Didn't know that.
Speaking of Penn State tight ends, Mike Gesicki's got his NFL debut today.
Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised I heard that name so much. It's probably just because I'm from Philadelphia.
Well, he's good. I think he's going to do great with the Dolphins.
Is he? All right. Well,
yeah, I think he might take a few weeks, but he'll get up there.
He is very available in leagues for people, by the way.
Well, let's stick with the Dolphins. Another guy who's listed as not likely to play, Devontae Parker.
Yeah, he's been all over the place the past couple of years. I think last year I had him on my team, and through a couple set of circumstances that were entirely not my fault, I accidentally played him twice when he was inactive. But yeah, it's just been, if it's not this, it's that. Like last year, I think it was a hamstring or something, and this year he broke his finger, and he's just, like, he's just so teasing, because, like, he has the talent, and he has the build and the opportunity, and he has the targets available to him with Landry being out, but he just can't stay on the field, or he's inconsistent, or something's always happening with him.
All right, well, then let's focus on the healthy guys. Who are there anybody who's... Kenny Stills, I guess Mike Gesicki is.
Yeah, it's Kenny Stills.
Albert Wilson
has been playing pretty well in camp as well.
Albert Wilson, I guess that's a name in a deeper league.
Yeah, if you're in deep, then like if you're in like a 14 team, super like double flex or something, then he might be worth a flyer. But right now, nothing. He'll get some attention.
No, is that the one that you have him?
Yeah, that's I have Gesicki in a 16 team league.
Well, that's fair.
One of the things, he's only owned by 11% of teams right now.
Yeah, but those are 10 team leagues,
right.
Probably.
I think you're
going to
see
leagues.
That jump way up after week one. He would be the guy I would tell you is going to overperform.
Well, if Parker's definitely going to be out for any extended period of time, then they, by default, you know, they don't have many options.
One of the things I find interesting about the fantasy app in ESPN this year is this weird little.
Boom
standard
chance?
Deviation chart over
what
here.
Is, I've not seen
the
that
boom
yet.
Chance and bust chance. So right now, ESPN is telling me there is a 6.0% chance that Mike Gesicki will boom, and there is a 6.0% chance Mike Gesicki will bust, which means that there is a what? That's 12. There's a 88% chance he does nothing. Like what?
No, that he performs averagely. Adequately. Yeah.
88% chance he performs adequately.
Which is between 5 and 15 points, according to them, for him. Particular.
Yeah. 5 and 15, why give it that much range?
I don't know, because you're only giving it a 6% chance to boom or bust. I don't know. It's, like you said, an unnecessary, stupid ESPN stat.
Let's pick somebody good then. Let's look at Saquon. There is a 25% boom chance and 6% bust chance.
Look at the deviation on that one.
The boom for him is over 25.
It is not standard.
The bust for him is below 10.
Well, either way.
Less than 9.3 points. Boom is over 23.2.
It sounds like a stupid made-up stat either way.
But yeah. Watson. IBM's Watson is making it.
Okay, so... It's legit. It's AI controlled.
I'll tell you what, robots are taking over the world, man. I'll
tell you what.
Well, I guess we're
I'll tell you what, man. This guy right here, he knows what he's talking about with fantasy, man.
He's a robot.
I call him Watson because he's like Sherlock Holmes, man.
Well, I guess from there, let's go into who we think in all of fantasy will outperform or underperform their given ESPN projection for this week.
Mine's easy. Mine's real, real easy. Jimmy Graham.
What's he at?
Jimmy Graham's projected 7.4 points playing Chicago tonight.
So you're saying he's going to get a touchdown?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's easily going to get a touchdown. Jimmy Graham, ESPN has slept on Jimmy Graham all offseason long. Jimmy Graham has done...
I understand it for the life of me.
He has gone to probably the best place he could go for his career right now in Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers is going to turn Jimmy Graham into his favorite red zone target. Easily. Because he knows how to use him. Jimmy Graham's best years were when he was with a pocket passer in New Orleans when Drew Brees knew how to use him. He went to Seattle, and Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll just didn't know how to effectively use Jimmy Graham up until last year. Last year they started figuring it out. But for 3 years, they literally had no idea how to use Jimmy Graham. And he suffered from it. He's going back to a pocket passer in Green Bay, and Aaron Rodgers is going to absolutely love having him on his team. 7.4 is way too low for a projection for Jimmy Graham. He's going to have a great week, and he's going to have a fantastic fantasy season.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think something that happens all the time in Green Bay, too, is yes, Aaron Rodgers is that pocket passer, but... It happens all the time where they're on the 10-yard line and they're looking at, like, second and goal, and the pocket breaks down, and Aaron Rodgers gets flushed out, and he's going to his right or left or something, and all Jimmy Graham has to do is just fade whatever direction Rodgers is going and just be an alley-oop target, which is he's very good at doing. So I think, yeah, he'll get a lot of touchdowns on that kind of play, like, where there is a design play, but it breaks down, and Rodgers is moving around and just finds Graham open somewhere in the back of the end zone.
I think it's a no-brainer for me that that's my pick.
Yeah, that's a very good one. My outperform this week is Mike Evans because he's projected at 10.9, but they're playing the Saints, and I envision the Buccaneers being down for the majority of this game. So I think 10.9 versus Saints, I think they're going to be passing a lot, and Ryan Fitzpatrick is a veteran quarterback. He's not the best quarterback, but he is a veteran quarterback, and I think he knows how to get these guys the ball when Mike Evans is clearly their best target on the whole team. So I think just that combination of just probably being down the whole game and needing to throw to try and get back in it will be very good for Mike Evans this week.
I heard a national analyst call Ryan Fitzpatrick a, quote, walking turnover.
That would be Nathan Peterman.
Nate Peterman, who I believe is getting the start today, isn't he?
Yeah.
Is he?
Yep.
Man.
See, it's tough here, because with these ESPN fantasy projections, you can clearly tell if they're projecting them to get a touchdown or not.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to kind of take into account that. I think, were we doing overperform or underperform?
Outperform. Outperform.
I'm going to go with Marvin Jones Jr. He's only projected 12.6, which isn't, like, terribly low. But I think that he was one of those guys that the Lions used a lot, especially in the red zone. So I think there's a chance that he might get 2 touchdowns today.
That is possible. He's going against. He has done that a few times.
They're Monday night game, so it will be tomorrow. But they're playing against the Jets as well. So I think that's one of those games where at home, Matt Stafford could throw for 400 yards, and 150 of those could be to Golden Tate, and 150 could be to Marvin Jones.
I think, honestly, I was looking at a few of my rosters the past couple of years, and it seems like I end up with Golden Tate every year. And I think it's very unlikely that he gets to 150 yards, but it's very likely to be a 10-catch, 88-yard kind of thing. Like, he gets so much love in that passing. He gets so many targets. So I don't think 150 is realistic for Golden Tate. But, yeah, 150 could easily go to Marvin Jones. And then Kenny Galladay is there. They don't have Eric Ebron anymore, but it's not like he did much anyway. So, Matt Stafford he's a passing machine. He could easily get 400, 450 yards like nothing.
Yep. All right, so.
Underperform.
He's going to do worse than their projections say they are.
My underperform, I don't think, Nick, I don't think you're going to like this, is Saquon. Because he's projected at 15.2,
oh.
But they're playing the Jags. So I have a feeling they're going to be down in this game, so I don't think they're going to be running a whole lot. And the Jags have a good defense, so I think that's a rough first game for him to start out at.
Yeah. The only thing that I think that we got going for us is that it's going to be a home game, and I hope that the home field advantage is going to work in our favor and at least make it a tighter game with us in the lead, hopefully. But yeah, I think you're wrong. I think Saquon's going to get his own.
We kind of hit on mine already. Let me pull up the actual number here. But James Conner, 12 points.
Underperform, you think he's going to?
Underperform. I think people are really risking it starting James Conner right now because again, we have not seen his ability to handle the workload as a feature back yet. I think 12 points is a stretch for him.
That's true. I think there are a lot of guys who fall into that. Like, I could see it happening, but there's just not enough of a sample size to be confident in starting him. I think Connor is a little different because he's going to be launched into that role like a Royce Freeman. I think a lot of people are starting Royce Freeman because he's that exciting rookie running back and he'll get the whole opportunity. Like, he'll get the volume to justify it. But I think other guys, like looking at my own team, Corey Davis, I think a lot of people have Corey Davis, but no one is really starting him because you just don't know what he's going to do this year with the new opportunities. And then I actually still have Jordan Wilkins on my team. I think there's a solid chance I don't pick up a kicker this week because I just don't want to drop anyone on my team. But Wilkins is another guy. Like, I like his season-long prospects because he's the starter, but I just don't feel confident starting him right now because he's the starting running back. He's going to get that volume, but I just want to wait and see how it goes. So I think Connor, for a lot of people, are just going to have him on their team and they'll feel confident about starting him maybe next week once they see how he's actually used.
Yeah, I think Connor's a good option for people who have, like, Mark Ingram and other running backs who they're kind of waiting to come back or who are injured.
I'm not saying he's not a good waiver option. I'm just saying...
No, I mean, he's a filler is what I'm saying. I think that this might be a good time to play him because, you know, he's a filler and there's other running backs out there who are out.
Good Lord, David Johnson's projected 18.9.
Is that in
our league? That's a tough one.
Yeah, that's our league. 18.9.
Half a point PPR at decimal scoring.
Gurley projected 19.1.
Yeah, I think my underperform is actually going to be another top running back, Jason, not yours or anything. You don't have a top running back.
Le'Veon's going to underperform this week. He's projected 0. I think he's going to get -1.
I think Ezekiel Elliott might...
Really? Who's Dallas playing?
Dallas is playing Carolina at Carolina.
Okay.
Luke Kuechly is currently healthy. I don't know how long that's going to last, but Luke Kuechly is currently healthy, the best linebacker in the league, in my opinion.
He is a monster.
I think that they're...
projected almost 17.
Yeah, so he's projected...
16.9. Against the Panthers' defense, that's a solid defense.
That offense has become completely one-dimensional.
It's dependent on him.
It's literally they're going to Le'Veon Bell him and just run him into the ground, but it's going to be by default because they have no other options.
Yeah. I mean, they have no tight end. They have no wide receiver. They have Cole Beasley and a rookie, Michael Gallup, and then
Allen Hurns.
That's pretty much it. Their tight ends are all unknowns. I think Rico Gathers was the Baylor basketball player who's now their tight end over there, but I think even he might be hurt or something. Like,
and I mean, I'm biased, but Dak is not a feature quarterback either.
No, he's not. Yeah.
Yeah, he's comparable to RG3 in terms of, like, made a big splash when he came into the league and then kind of quickly tailed off.
But I don't know. It was more circumstances in, like, the situation than anything, too. It was him and Zeke both coming in. Teams had no film on either of them and weren't prepared to really stop either of them. And it was that offensive line as well. I mean, Zeke just ran behind this mauling offensive line and led the league in rushing that year. And I think the offensive line has gotten a little worse. I think I saw their center, Travis Frederick, is out or injured or something. I think their offensive line isn't as good as it was. So I think, Dak he's a talented quarterback. He has a skill set to succeed in the NFL, but he's just not a top-tier guy.
No. And I'd agree with that he's an adequate enough to have success, but he's not.
Yeah, he doesn't hurt you. Like, he doesn't force the ball and turn the ball over. He does just enough, but he's not going to get you over the hump.
Tell you what, this is going to be a big year for him, though, in terms of, like, if he's going to get re-signed by the Cowboys and what kind of deal he's going to get, or if he's going to just hit the market after his rookie contract. Because
If he can show that he can perform without Dez, without Jason Witten, without that big offensive line, and without
perform without Zeke.
Yeah, if he can,
He had his wide receiver and his tight end last year. He just didn't have a running back, and he couldn't do anything. Exactly, now you're taking away the two things that matter most to him. He's not going to succeed.
Mm. Yeah, I think...
The team might succeed because they have Zeke. He's not going to succeed.
I don't think the team's going to succeed because I think that Zeke is going to struggle to get 100-yard games this year with no passing options. I think that he's going to...
Yeah, teams are going to be stacking the box
They're going to game plan for him for sure, yep.
I mean, if I was a defensive coordinator, I'd be running Engage 8 Madden style on them every time.
I'll tell you what, Jim Schwartz ran Engage 8 in the preseason at one point, and I kid you not, it was Engage 8. It was to a T. You saw the same play that I ran on Madden as a kid, and I texted my brother right away. I'm like, I'm 90% sure Jim Schwartz just ran Engage 8 in the preseason.
The strong safety coming flying in.
Oh, yeah. All three linebackers went. The strong safety went. You had three guys back there to defend against the pass.
That's awesome. That was one of those plays in Madden that everyone ran way more often than they should have. Like, that was not a successful play, but like one out of every 10 times you just happen to call it on a run play and you'd stuff the guy like 5 yards in the backfield. Every other time they would just like get a screen pass or like a slant that would go for like 40 yards.
In Madden, you know, it works more often than not if you catch people off guard because if it's a pass play and they do more than like a one-step drop back, then you got them.
So speaking of my brother, we have legitimate fantasy advice coming in mid-show.
Oh, okay. What is that?
Here's what he says. He said, I am starting James Conner because he's getting the start and I got him on the waiver wire. But at my flex, I'm torn. I've got Cooper Kupp, Adrian Peterson, and James White. I'm leaning towards benching Kupp, but I can't decide whether I want to start Adrian Peterson or James White in the flex.
That's a tough one.
That is a tough one. I would do Adrian Peterson, and here's why. Washington is not known for having a strong passing offense. They are known for running the football, and they are better when they have a running back who excels inside the tackles. And that is what Adrian Peterson does best. Keeps the ball inside the tackles, bruises his way forward, and gains yards. I think he's going to get a ton of touches. I think they're going to give the majority of the running plays to Adrian Peterson. Not necessarily passing plays, but majority of the running plays are going to go to Adrian Peterson. And I think he's going to rack up the points even if it only is because he gets a couple goal line scores or something like that, I think Adrian Peterson's a good play, especially in the flex today.
Yeah, he gets the goal line work for sure, but I think so. They named him the starter, but Chris Thompson is going to be getting all of the passing down work out of the backfield. And even though Adrian Peterson is a starter, I don't know how much like P. Ryan is going to come in. I don't know how much Rob Kelly is going to come in because those two guys are still there. So I don't know how much those guys take away from Adrian Peterson because I think they're looking at it like Adrian Peterson was this amazing generational running back, but he's new to the team, doesn't know the playbook fully, and he's an older guy. So, I mean, older. I mean, it's crazy you say older. He's only like 31 or 32 or something. But for a running back lifespan, he's on the older side. So I don't know how much they want to give him breaks and get other guys in there, and maybe he runs twice a series or maybe he runs three times, four times, whatever it is. So I just don't know how much he'll be in there, even though he is the starter.
For a running back life, he's not old. He's ancient. he should be in the Hall of Fame already. Like, that's how old he is. I don't know if I agree with you guys. I think that, wasn't he coming into New Orleans last year, week one, projected to be, like, splitting with Mark Ingram / vying for the starting running back position in New Orleans?
He was supposed to be, and then Kamara came out of nowhere.
Yeah, well, I think before Kamara came around, they had already moved on from Adrian Peterson. It didn't take long.
The very first game that he went to Arizona, didn't he put up like 140 yards on the ground and two scores?
I think that he's that boomer bust potential. His boomer bust is probably 25 on both ends in ESPN's.
Boom chance. 6%, bust chance 29%.
Thank you.
They're calling boom greater than 17.9, bust less than 3.5.
That's
They're giving
I'm
him
at.
A 29% chance to get less than 3.5 points.
I think that there's a chance where... I'm surprised that he was named their starting running back. I didn't know that. I think that might just be for the first play of the game. Because I don't think he's really going to be on the field. They can't run him into the ground.
That's actually, yeah, wow.
I don't think that... I think that Chris Thompson will be on the field majority of the day.
So would you start James White?
I would probably look at James White.
I was going to say James White. I think he's the...
Yeah, with Sony Michel out, it's pretty much just him and Rex Burkhead. There's no other...
Never.
I mean, they have Jeremy Hill now, but he'll get... basically just goal line touches.
Trust a New England running back in fantasy.
That's true.
Ever.
Yeah, but not trusting them doesn't mean you don't ever start them.
You are gambling every time you start a New England running back in fantasy.
I think it's all relative, though.
You have no idea what Belichick's going to do.
If you have a better option, then obviously go with someone else. But in Ham's situation, when you're looking at AP, James White, or Cooper Kupp, when you have those three options, I would take James White.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think James White's the option there. He's texting his brother back furiously.
I am.
All right. Let's see. Oh, another injury that we didn't talk about before.
Let's do that and then...
Will Fuller.
Oh.
Who's going to... How much does DeAndre Hopkins benefit, or does
he benefits.
Hurt? Does he hurt?
Well, is Will Fuller officially in or out, or is he just questionable?
Schefter
he's questionable,
tweeted,
but they changed all his projections to zero.
Here is so
Schefter
is
tweeted he's unlikely to play.
Conundrum of the PQD, the probable, questionable, doubtful, where no one has any idea what any of it means.
I hate that, dude. I hate it so
I think,
much.
Like, I just it, like probable. I think it's like a 90% chance that they play. Like every once in a while, someone will be named probable and then they won't play. Questionable is like 50-50 where like I've seen it where like sometimes guys will come in questionable and they'll play and play really well. And then sometimes I think it's just as likely that you have a guy come in who was listed as questionable and they have 20 carries for 150 yards and two touchdowns. But then
they got rid of probable.
Yeah,
though,
you know that, right? Yeah, they did.
Oh, damn.
They got rid of probable
that was two
a couple
years, ago.
Years back, yeah.
But then you also have questionable guys who come in and then they don't play at all because they're injured. Like, I wish I could be at these practices, like, on a Friday and watch a guy. Because, like, when they say questionable, does that mean the guy's limping? Does
well,
it mean
that's the, issue
the guy's running around but he's in pain? Does that mean he's running around, no pain, but he's like 80% as fast as he should be. Like, it's no one has any idea what any of it means. Now that
probable isn't a thing anymore.
Yeah, because questionable is probable.
You could literally just have a bruise on your pinky finger, and you have to be listed as questionable in the injury report because there is no probable.
And then there's assholes like Bill Belichick who's been listing Tom Brady on the injury report for the past 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, but that's a unique situation.
Anyway,
yeah.
Here's the deal with Fuller. Unlikely to play, but does want to test it pregame before making a final decision.
Hungy's hopeful.
Man.
Year of Hungy 2. Starts with Will Fuller.
Starting off with a bang. I think that doesn't impact Hopkins
Cameron
at all.
Because
I think Hopkins still gets his 13 targets, regardless of whether Will Fuller's in there or not.
Yeah, I think that, I don't know, it might hurt DeAndre a little bit just because that takes out the deep threat. So now the safety's going to be watching him every play. They're not going to be
watching the
other guys. I think Lamar Miller could benefit from it slightly just in terms of being used a little bit more. But I don't think that Will Fuller was too big of an impact on the guys on their team.
Who's their quarterback?
They have
Deshaun Watson.
Ah, that's right. Oh, well then.
He's back. Well, that's the big thing is that when Will Fuller was putting up his huge numbers, it was when Deshaun Watson was playing.
Yeah.
After Deshaun Watson got hurt, Will Fuller's numbers dropped off. Literally, like, he fell off a cliff.
I think. Well, he was also putting up just insane, ridiculous numbers. Like, it was some ridiculous percentage, like a 50% touchdown rate, where, like, at one point in the season, he had, like, 12 catches, but, like, 6 of them were touchdowns.
Right. Here's a couple crazy numbers. Against Kansas City in week 5, 2 catches, 57 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Against Tennessee, 4 catches, 35 yards, 2 touchdowns. Against Cleveland, 2 catches, 62 yards and a touchdown. Against Seattle, 5 catches, 125 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Those are all consecutive weeks, by the way.
Yeah. That's 4, 5, 6, and 8 with the bye week smattered in between there.
7 touchdowns in 4 weeks.
And that's and literally that week 9, that's where Watson got hurt. Literally right there, it fell off a cliff.
And he didn't get more than 4 points the rest of the way out. 1 6.5 performance. But
man, that's rough. Can you imagine the guy who had Fuller and sold high on him, like week 8 or week 7 or something like that?
Oh my god, you probably could have gotten like Le'Veon Bell at that
probably
point.
Probably got a king's ransom in a trade there. Yeah. And then whatever schmuck ended up with him after that was probably cursing him the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Well,
let's see. What else do we have?
We're hitting our end point here.
Yeah, I think.
Are we thinking it's a fireball hot take time?
Yeah, fireball hot take. Run through it. All
right. So, as we record this, it is 10:10 a.m. on Sunday, September 9th, and week 1 is here. So my hot take, I have my shot of fireball here. I'm ready to go.
10:10 a.m.
10:10 a.m. Never too early. And here we go. Oh, yeah, it tastes delicious.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
Yeah, I should just pour it in with my cereal or dump it in with my coffee or something like that. But here we go. So my fireball is telling me that Leonard Fournette will be the number one scoring running back this week. Going against Knicks, New York football Giants. And here's why. I mean, this isn't the spiciest take, but so Leonard Fournette, I think he'll be the number one scoring running back for a couple of reasons, because that Jacksonville offense is going to run entirely through Fournette. I think for his season long, I think he'll be a really good option that will probably outperform his draft position. But specifically for today, I think with Marquise Lee being out for the season and having kind of some unknown wide receivers in Keelan Cole, and Blake Bortles not being the strongest start, I guess, I think they'll kind of lean on Fournette, and I think they'll just be up in this game, so he'll be running more often. So I think it's putting a couple things together. I think he just has a really good day and scores maybe 25 points or something like that.
Yeah. I think he has the potential to be a number one running back any given week. So that's maybe fair. Not the hottest take, but we'll see. I think the Giants are without Olivier Vernon at the beginning of the season, so that could definitely pull in your advantage. But I really hope you're wrong, Jason.
Well, obviously.
But this reminds me, our other poll that we did based off of your last hot take about which AFC East wide receiver will finish the season with the most fantasy points. You, of course, said Kenny Stills.
Oh, yeah.
I said Julian Edelman. And Hungy, you said Chris Hogan?
I did say Chris Hogan.
Chris Hogan. All right. So then we put the poll out there, and we got the results of the poll. I put your option, my option. I put one of the top receiving options on all the teams. So I put Julian Edelman, Kelvin Benjamin, Kenny Stills, and Robbie Anderson, and I said to write in. Hungy's the only one that wrote in with Chris Hogan. Then other than that, we had your boy Kenny Stills had 15%. Kelvin Benjamin had 8%, Julian Edelman had 38%, and Robbie Anderson had 39% of the votes.
Wow.
So everybody's thinking they're very high on Robbie Anderson. Well, so
tell them they're wrong.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you listen to what the Jets media and everyone around New York is saying, they're thinking Sam Darnold is like the second coming of Jesus.
They thought the same thing about Sanchez.
Sanchez, remember?
Sanchez, I knew that was going nowhere.
Rex
he was one of those random draft
his
risers.
Wearing his jersey.
Who just, like, Mark Sanchez in, like, I want to say, like, April was in all, like, draft boards for, like, Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, all that stuff. They were having Mark Sanchez go, like, the end of the first round, second round somewhere. And then as the draft got closer, like, the weeks went by, he just started slowly rising and rising and rising up draft boards for no reason. I could not understand it. And then when he got taken at number 6 overall, I was like, why? I didn't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. I am always very wary of rookies. I don't know how people are going to perform.
I'm always very wary of rookies, says Nick, who is currently wearing a Saquon Barkley jersey.
Yeah, I mean, every once in a while.
I'm always very wary of rookies.
Well, I mean, the last time quarterbacks had success immediately was... What was that year? 2012 with Robert Griffin III, Andrew Luck, and Russell Wilson.
Yeah, every now and then,
any rookies have had success.
You get guys who are not questions. You get guys who are good enough that you know that they're going to come into the league and be good. This is one of those situations. This isn't a rookie I'm worried about. I mean other rookies who...
Or they come into
such
a good
quarterbacks.
Situation. Like Dak Prescott a couple years ago, he came into a really good situation, and he had the opportunity with Romo going out. And I think also Romo... being there helped him a lot, too, because he had that veteran presence in his ear the whole way, who was kind of being that second coach for him. And then he also had the really good running game and the good offensive line and Dez Bryant and Witten and all that kind of stuff. So rookie quarterbacks have to come into a good situation, and I just don't think the Jets have a good situation this year.
No, I don't either. But it remains to be seen. Ooh.
Week one. Get your stretching out.
Yeah, I know.
Hungy.
I was
you
just stretching.
Stretch
yeah.
to watch some football, man.
I do. I'm going to go watch some pee-wee football first, warm up a little bit.
You're going to be checking your lineups and everything the entire
time.
Oh, yeah,
really, that's going to be it. But anyway, I think it's about time we wrap it up and get ready for week one.
Yeah, turn on
it
some TV.
Time for football, fellas.
Pre-game show for the next 3 hours.
Yep.
Let's go.
And now I have a couple hours to decide if I'm going to pick up a kicker or not.
I can find out whether Will Fuller is going to play or not.
That's true. Now, here's a question. If he is playing, do you start him?
Yep, I'm starting him.
Yeah, well, yeah, if he's playing, but I don't think he's playing.
I mean,
he's
I'm
got
always wary of that.
Back.
Like,
if he's playing,
when it comes down, when it comes down to a game-time decision and they decide, all right, I'm going to play, I just, like, with that questionable status, I have no idea how often he'll be on the field, like if he's going to have, a pitch count with baseball or... if he's just going to be kind of hampered or limited. Like, you just, there's no way of knowing how much you're going to get out of a guy if he decides to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see.
We will.
1 o'clock.
I don't know if
they're playing
at
one, but.
They are playing at one.
Okay.
Houston and New England. If you haven't done so already, follow us on Twitter at @PPR_official. You can tweet at us, ask us any fantasy advice that you'd like, or just say hi.
Start 'em, sit 'em.
Poster score for the Wonderlic test.
We're still waiting.
Yeah.
Still waiting. I'm going to make that joke every week.
Great.
Anyway. @PPR_official. Next episode will come out next week. We'll talk about fantasy performances from this week, as well as look ahead to week 2. Anybody got anything else you want to add?
Adios.
All right.
So
we'll see you next week. I'm Matt.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Jason. Talk to you guys soon.
Peace.
Go Birds, 1-0.
Go Giants.